You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening and for subscribing, and to those who support us on Patreon. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with my co-host, David Ramil. We've got a great show today. We're opening up the mailbag and talking about if it's too late for the Heat to tank and how James Johnson can be better utilized by the Heat. But let's start with this question from Billy from Cleveland, who writes in, Marc Gasol and Mike Conley are on the trading block at 33 and 31 years old, respectively. Who's buying? Gasol is making $24 million and has 1.5 seasons left. Conley is getting $30 million with 2.5 seasons left. Even if Miami could, not saying they should, bring one or both of them in without losing Winslow or Richardson, how far could they even go in the East? And would 2 years of semi-contention be worth losing your prospects like Bam and Jones Jr.? Any team willing to buy them would probably only want to ship out matching salaries for the one they want and a single first, considering contract size, length, and their ages. So a little bit to dig into that, David. But I think the interesting part of that is how far could Miami go if they had, let's say, one of Mike Conley or Marc Gasol. I think Mike Conley is probably the better fit for Miami. If just if you had to have one. Between if you had Conley, Winslow, Richardson, and assuming like Billy does, and I think he assumes correctly, that you're probably having to get rid of at least Bam Adebayo, maybe Bam and Derrick Jones Jr. I don't know if Derrick Jones Jr. is a player Memphis would be interested in, but you're probably going to at least have to get rid of Bam Adebayo in any sort of move to get one of those guys. How far could they go in the East with a team like that?
I mean, we're completely discounting whether Memphis would even want to engage in any kind of trade like that with Miami, right? I mean, I don't know that we have enough. I mean, you'd have to include Goran Dragic, I suppose.
Yeah. Like Billy said, it sounds like probably like Goran, Bam, and a first-round pick would be like a starting point.
So as far as Conley's addition, look, I think we've long underrated Mike Conley around the league. Memphis has had a very clear identity that I don't know he's necessarily helped shape, because it's not his defense that has really driven that team. He's a good defender. But I think between between Gasol's defense, between Tony Allen's defense, behind Zach Randolph at one point, it was those figures that really helped define the grit and grind era, not Conley necessarily. And Conley, look, is older. He's had injury issues. So if you were to acquire a player like him, you hope, and this is a very, very hard hope to hang your hat on, that he stays healthy. But even if you were able to acquire him, I don't know that this team would be any better. And depending on what they give up, they might be even a little bit worse. Like, that's not to say anything about Conley as an individual player, but you just might give up too much for a player like Conley.
Where would Mike Conley, where does he rank as far as, is he a top 30 player right now in the NBA? No. I think I'd put him in the top 30 right now.
It's tough, because, I mean, when you look at, let's look at the 12 players on the All-Star team and for each conference, right. He fit right under that. I mean, that's tricky. I don't know that he's necessarily a huge
upgrade. I think that's right where he is. I think right now he's an upgrade over Dragic from a defensive standpoint. I know that there's been lingering issues with Dragic with his knee, and that's why he's been out, because he's undergoing that knee scope. But I've talked even earlier in the season when he was on the court, he just doesn't look right defensively. Like he was probably one of Miami's worst defenders right now, and obviously a lot of that had to do with the knee issue. But Conley is not that. Conley has always been a plus defensively, and you're right. He hasn't been the all NBA level defensive player that like a Tony Allen, Marc Gasol have been, but he's been always a plus from that point guard spot. Mm-hmm. And his 3-point shooting's come along. It's still inconsistent, but it's come along. It's pretty good. And he can get you 20 points a night. And even Dragic at this point isn't doing that. So I think there's a little bit. I mean, I know you're saying, I don't know how big of the upgrade is, but I think if you kind of take, if you consider both ends of the court, it's a pretty substantial one. Mm-hmm. I have Dragic as, and I've said this before, Dragic to me is in the between 50 and the 60th best player in the NBA, somewhere in that range. And I think Conley is between 25 and 30.
Well, I mean, that sounds like an upgrade on paper then, but the other problem is his fit then.
Right.
You know, what's going to happen with Point Justice now? I think I like Dragic's ability to slide into the two or off guard position a little bit better than I like Conley's ability to do so. Conley's a little undersized. I think he'll have a hard time being guarded by bigger wing players. I mean, it could be a problem. I don't know how it'll work out. Maybe he provides a nice 1-2 punch offensively with Winslow. Maybe not. I would have to see. I imagine if we want Winslow to keep the ball in his hands because he's probably more effective, it would probably behoove him to have a guy like Dragic who's more of a, I think, a more effective catch-and-shoot player than Conley is.
That's a really good point because Conley's bread and butter is running pick-and-roll with Marc Gasol, basically, right? Yeah. Like, that's how he is good. That is what he does. Dragic is a better but catch-and-shoot player, you're right. And I think the matchup, like, I don't love that Winslow and Conley matchup in the backcourt. I don't love it. I like Conley on the defensive end. I love it. I love that. If you've got Winslow, Conley, and Richardson as your perimeter guys, that's awesome. But I think like he'd have enough guys who are awesome on defense. At some point, you got to get somebody who could score and be a threat off the ball, and I think that's huge, and I don't think Conley is necessarily a threat off the ball. So I don't love it. What about Gasol? Like, I think, if Memphis called, if Chris Wallace called Pat Riley right now and was like, Whiteside for Gasol straight up, I mean, Pat Riley would do, you know, somersaults through the hallway. But that's not happening. So
no, I know. And that's
unless you can unload Whiteside, and I don't think that the Grizzlies would want Whiteside. So now you're talking about getting a third team involved, and what is that looking like, and what team would that even be? Like, unless you could do that, I just don't see I don't see where Gasol fits in.
No, I do think that he would raise Miami's ceiling a little bit higher than Conley, just because I think, you know, as you pointed out, his ability to set screens in a pick and roll would free up so much of what Miami's offense is lacking right now. You know, his floor spacing ability, clearly an upgrade over Hassan Whiteside. Huh. So I think that would be, you lose
like a magic, a magic swap, like a Whiteside for Gasol magic swap that just happens.
Yeah. I think
that's what you're talking about.
Yeah. This team would win 5 more games at least.
Wow. That's it. Because in a vacuum, Conley is easily a better player than Marc Gasol right now, today.
Right.
Right.
Sure.
Gasol has clearly slipped a little bit. But I don't disagree with what you're saying as far as a fit standpoint goes. I'd still probably lean more towards Conley helping this team more than Gasol at this point. But I don't know that either of them move the needle enough for Miami to seriously engage in trade talks and sort of try to move mountains to get it done. And then, as Billy points out in his email, take on that those contracts for the future. And we talked about this at length with Keith Smith in our podcast last week. Our trade deadline 101, which if you haven't listened to that, go ahead and listen to it, because we break down a lot of the numbers and stuff. But basically, it would put Miami in a bind of ever trying to be seriously involved in those 2020 and 2021 free agency classes. I'd rather at least hold out hope for that than add a guy who's not the perfect fit and have to trade away an asset like Bam Adebayo or a first-round pick to do so. I'm not into it. So a hard pass. Also, we should say we're recording this a little early. You guys are hearing this Tuesday morning. We're recording this late Sunday night. So if Gasol and Conley have been traded already, we're sorry for wasting like 10 minutes of your time. Let's move on to this next question from PJ, who writes in, why is the front office so reluctant to break up this team? Rumors broke out that teams wanted James Johnson last season, and around the Jimmy Butler to Miami situation, we did nothing. Teams want Ellington, who we don't play, and he's still here. For what? Cut your losses. This team sucks.
Nice. Thank you, PJ. I mean, look, you got to give credit to a listener like PJ. I mean, they're sticking with us even though this team sucks, and I think that's a testament to how great we are as podcasters. But
I think you're right. The team sucks. We're great.
Yeah, that's the Lockdown Heat motto if ever I've heard one. It's interesting that he writes this because I have a tab open on my browser window as we record this, about a piece from The Athletic about the behind-the-scenes look at the trade deadline and what that entails. And
is that the Sam Amick joint?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Sam, a big friend of ours and a guy we record with semi-regularly on Lockdown NBA. Fantastic job of him talking to execs and the process of getting trades organized. And, you know, I think you and I both knew this beforehand, but to see it cemented, I think for our listeners that might not be as familiar, definitely should check it out because they talk about how unlikely a trade even is to happen. You know, that there are dozens and dozens of discussions between teams over the course of a season, and almost none of them pan out. There's a greater chance of nothing happening. And so when PJ writes in, why is the team so reluctant to break up this group? I don't think it's that they're reluctant. I just don't think they found a deal. As we talked about with Keith on that podcast you referenced, I mean, it's almost impossible to make a deal. And it's not like we can trade our really bad apples for really great oranges. We're going to get really, really bad oranges in exchange for our really bad apples. And that's just the case. I mean, we don't want to take bad contracts so we can unload our bad contracts. We don't want to send a player with value like Josh Richardson or Justice Winslow in exchange for nothing. I mean, maybe we could. I mean, it's possible that we could just tear this team down and have a really stripped down unit and have maybe acquire a number of draft picks the way Danny Ainge did in Boston a number of years ago. But even then, I think we would view those moves a little differently if not for the accelerated time frame that team took to improve the way they did. Look, they hired Brad Stevens on a group that was supposed to rebuild. They had traded away a lot of their key players, got a really nice stash of draft picks because of a terrible Billy King move from the Brooklyn Nets. And that was able to help them restart their team. But they also got Isaiah Thomas, who had a huge boost in his career. They got a really solid wing player in Jay Crowder, who wasn't being utilized at all in Dallas. They got Kelly Olynyk.
And then they were able to turn Jay Crowder and Isaiah Thomas deals into another really bad trade from the other side. Cleveland, the Cavs trading them Kyrie Irving for an injured Isaiah Thomas, who never really played for them. So they got they were on the winning ends of two horrible trades by beginning GMs. Look, I also think, yeah, would it be like you kind of just say, all right, this team sucks, tear it down. But how many real assets does this team have? And we've talked about that even going back to the beginning of the season. There's four. There's four real assets. Goran Dragic has value as on the trade block. I do think he has value. Right. James Johnson, Wayne Ellington, Rodney Magruder. That's it. Those are your four assets. All right, well, let's go down the list. Goran Dragic is injured. Nobody's trading for him. James Johnson plays an extremely important role for this Heat team. He basically keeps that front court from falling apart, right? Because he's the only power forward on the roster who could play as a starter next to Hassan Whiteside. And that's even going to be more exacerbated by the fact that Derrick Jones Jr. is going to be out. So he plays a really important role. And so Miami really has to decide, like, all right, we're punting this season, and we're going to just trade James Johnson for something. I don't even know what they could get for James Johnson. And
at this point, not much, I think.
Yeah, I mean, like, what are you really looking at? Like, would the Houston Rockets give you, like, their first-round pick this year that's probably going to be a late first-round pick? Mm-hmm. Maybe? But, like, is that worth it if you're a Heat team trying to make the playoffs? And I would, like, James Johnson's had an up and down season, but overall, just again, he is Miami's best and most important glue guy at this point, as far as just keeping the rotation together in a way that makes even a semblance of sense. If you trade James Johnson, you're basically saying we're not making the playoffs this year, unless you get something in return for him that replaces that kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And there's just not that many guys like James Johnson, which is why he's an asset. That's why he has value as a piece who can help a contending team. So that's not really an option right now. Okay, well, look at Rodney Magruder. Well, the team didn't want to trade Rodney Magruder. We've heard that from several local beat reporters, that they basically didn't view Rodney Magruder as a trade asset, even though I think most people on the outside would, just because, okay, he's young, he's on a minimum contract, you could probably get a couple draft picks for him, maybe like a pair of second rounders or something in that kind of Justin Holiday going from the Bulls to New Orleans, or the Bulls to Memphis type of model of mm-hmm. a trade. Mm-hmm. But he was starting for Miami for most of the season. They really liked him, and they didn't want to trade him. So, okay, that wasn't an option. And then you look at Wayne Ellington. All right, well, yeah, Wayne Ellington makes sense as a trade option. But you got to give him to a team and not take any money back, because the only reason to trade Wayne Ellington is to get under the luxury tax. And if you trade Wayne Ellington, you barely get under the luxury tax, so you can't take really any money back. And so now all of a sudden you're asking just basically two teams in the league to help you out who can basically absorb Wayne Ellington's contract. And so that it just makes it really difficult, and you're not really in the driver's seat as far as trade negotiations goes. So that's when you kind of get into the nitty-gritty. That's why this team, I don't think, has broken anything up. And I just don't think that their complete teardown is worthwhile, because you don't want to attach Bam and Justice and Josh to some of these Whiteside and Tyler Johnson contracts. Not at this point. It's better to just wait it out. Those guys have 1 year left on their contracts after the season. Just wait it out. There's no reason, like that. That's when the teardown happens. Keep your valuable assets, or not even assets, your good players, your Josh Richardson's, your Bam Adebayo's, your Justice Winslow's. You keep them now, and then just wait it out. Wait out these other contracts, and just try to improve the team that way. Unfortunately, that's where the Heat are. Even though I will say they need to find a deal for Magruder and Ellington sooner rather than later.
And look, I hate to keep going back to that article, but I think it bears repeating that, I mean, trades are very difficult to pull off, folks. And as much as it's easy for us to plug in a few numbers and hit a keystroke here and there on the trade machine, that's not the reality of how deals take place. It's something that's shaped over months and months and months. Look, if, to PJ's point, we were shopping JJ and other players around earlier this season, I would imagine that some of those talks intensify over the next few weeks. But ultimately, our feeling, I think, is that they'll come back somewhat negatively and nothing will get finalized. Because I don't see a deal looming or something likely to happen in the landscape. It just doesn't seem very realistic because, again, you can't get anything worth in return. You're not going to get a significantly good player. Nobody's moving a superstar at the trade deadline this year. It's not going to happen. It seems more likely that something's going to happen during the offseason.
I still think an Ellington move happens. I just think that the Heat are motivated enough to figure it out from a luxury tax standpoint and all that.
This play against the Knicks, though, kind of changes that, doesn't it? I mean,
it might. I don't know. I still like, because you still got to figure Tyler Johnson comes back and takes that role, the starting role again. And then you still have to think about Dragic coming back and where does he fit in. I still end up thinking that, you know, I don't think Ellington's re-signing here. Like, after this, I think that relationship is soured. I think he's like, no, screw this. Like, you've got eight guards ahead of me. I'm going to go find somewhere I can play. I still ultimately think Ellington gets dealt. But it might in another, like, it might be one of these teams that after the trade deadline shakes out and all these, you know, whatever minor to major moves happen, there might be teams sitting there with a need for a shooting guard or a three-point specialist, and the Heat can kind of swoop in and be like, here you go. Give us a couple second-rounders or whatever it would be. Let's move on to our final question for the mailbag. This one comes from Daniel. Maybe James Johnson needs to be a facilitator, more than Miami currently allows him to be, to maximize him. I should say that this was in response to a tweet that I had about the Heat using James Johnson more as a point forward in the start of that second half against Friday night's game against Cleveland, which they did. We didn't recap that game, obviously. It was a Friday night. But I do think that James Johnson is being used a little bit more. I don't know if it's because he's just feeling better. He's in better shape now after coming back from that injury that started the season. But James Johnson, as that point forward, like we saw so often last year, hasn't necessarily been the case consistently this season, David. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a lot of that has to do with Justice Winslow being the point guard now. Right. But do you think we should see more of that?
I don't know. I feel like I don't think he should be the facilitator, no. I think he's a secondary or tertiary facilitator, to be honest with you. I mean, I'd still prefer the ball in Winslow's hands first and then Richardson's hands second, and with James Johnson being the third option. And I think that doesn't even speak to what happens when Goran Dragic is in play. I mean, and that's the problem, is that you have all these guys that can create shots for themselves and not enough guys who are capable of knocking those shots down consistently, and one of which should be James. I mean, I think we're having a different conversation here. If Johnson was a much more competent three-point shooter, we'd be looking at him being, you know, not necessarily the facilitator, but rather the recipient of other playmaking abilities. So to me, I like his role as currently constructed, being an occasional facilitator, a guy that you can go to if there's a matchup that, you know, makes that a plausible reality. So I don't know that he needs to be a more of a facilitator than he already is. Do you disagree?
Well, in the pecking order, I think it should be Justice in the starting lineup, Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson, and then sort of everybody else, right? And those everybody else's would basically be Tyler Johnson and James Johnson. Whiteside's not doing any facilitating. So I like where he's at right now, but I also like that the Heat just sort of like to get him going. Again, going back to that Cleveland game, James Johnson didn't have a great first half. And to start the second half, Eric Spoelstra put the ball in James Johnson's hands. Justice Winslow was very comfortable playing off the ball and even actually hit a three-point shot off of a James Johnson driving kick. And Winslow has been great as a three-point shooter, as a catch-and-shoot three-point shooter this season, so he can do that. That's a thing that is available pretty much all the time in that starting unit. So I like the idea of calling James Johnson's number to get him going, almost like you would force feed Hassan Whiteside to get him going early in his minutes. I like that. You could see such a heightened level of play from James Johnson when he's scoring and when he's kind of doing stuff. And once he's productive a little bit, his defense picks up, he becomes a better rebounder, the turnovers come down because he's not forcing it as much. So I like that. I like just force feeding him the ball, call his number, call a couple plays for him, let him get going for a little bit, and then go back to the natural order of things where he's basically not a point forward as much as he used to be, because again, that's Justice Winslow's job now. So, and Josh Richardson's job now too. So give them the ball for the most part, but call more plays for James Johnson every once in a while. And I think that's a good balance.
Doesn't that take away from Winslow's impact though? I mean,
if you allow, like, Justice got a 3-pointer off of that. Like, you only need to do it 2 or 3 times a game. I think you can afford that.
He seems more like a safety valve facilitator than anything else, right? I mean, you have Winslow primarily bringing the ball down. He swing, goes back to Winslow. He finds the right spot there. He has, I think, a better sense of timing and how to penetrate a defense. And then, you know, as the shot clock winds down, then you find Johnson on the perimeter, and he either is able to get past the first-time defender there and maybe make something at the rim. Otherwise, then he's the guy who's trying to find somebody along the perimeter, and then that opens up opportunities for others. But I just don't know that he's got the kind of speed right now where he can consistently break down defenses as well as Winslow can.
Yeah, if those defenses aren't the Cleveland Cavaliers, it might be a little harder.
Yeah,
I can see that. All right, well, that's all we have for today. Thanks for listening. If you've got a smart speaker, you can tell it to play podcast Locked On Heat. Connect with us on Twitter at Locked On Heat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes. Yeah!
Wrap it up, B.